This is Impeachment, a daily podcast from WNYC. I'm Brian Lehrer. This is Tuesday, October 15th. So I would say the big impeachment news right now that Washington is just beginning to digest was 9 hours of testimony yesterday by Trump's own former Russia and Ukraine expert, Fiona Hill, who dropped some bombshells about Trump's own former national security advisor, John Bolton. According to the New York Times, Bolton compared the back-channel dealings with Ukraine to a drug deal, he used the words drug deal, and called Rudy Giuliani, quote, a hand grenade that's going to blow everybody up. And that is something coming from him, right? Bolton is the one who people usually consider the most explosive guy in the room. So we wondered, how does that sound to Democratic Congressman Hakeem Jeffries, a member of the House Judiciary Committee, which would have to vote on articles of impeachment? Jeffries is a congressman from New York City, where Rudy was mayor for 8 years.
I know Rudy Giuliani to be a failed mayor, a failed presidential candidate, and now a failed attorney who may find himself on the other side of the law as it relates to the Ukrainian situation. And what is clear is that he was doing the bidding of the President of the United States of America. And Brian, we know that because the rough transcript of the July 25th call, Rudolph Giuliani's name, I believe, was mentioned 5 or 6 times, the majority of which were by the President of the United States, who directed the Ukrainian president to look out for Rudolph Giuliani in connection with the effort to dig up dirt on Joe Biden. And so we may see the president try to run away from Rudolph Giuliani. It's impossible because his own words connect him to Rudolph Giuliani in a very troubling way.
Another thing that John Bolton did, according to the account of Fiona Hill's testimony yesterday, was to instruct one of his aides to alert White House lawyers or National Security Council lawyers, maybe that's the same thing, about what Trump and Rudy and the others were up to with Ukraine. That's when he called it a drug deal. Is this the first you heard of that referral to legal counsel inside the administration by John Bolton?
Yes, but it is consistent with a pattern of what has occurred as it relates to Trump's own appointees being deeply troubled by the president's effort to pressure the Ukrainian government to target an American citizen for political gain. We have John Bolton, apparently very troubled, directed his aide to refer the matter to White House counsel. You have the general counsel of the CIA, a Trump appointee, who was troubled by the facts that it had emerged and made a criminal referral from the CIA to the Department of Justice. You have Trump's acting director of national intelligence, who made clear in public testimony that the whistleblower acted in good faith and that the whistleblower followed the applicable laws. You had Trump's intelligence community inspector general, again, an appointee of the president, say that the whistleblower raised a matter of urgent concern and a matter that needed to be acted upon. And so we're going to follow the facts. We're going to apply the law. We're going to be guided by the Constitution. But the emerging picture is that people within the Trump administration, who the president himself appointed, recognized that there was serious wrongdoing that was occurring, and that wrongdoing may trace directly to the president of the United States of America.
So let me ask you a pushback question from, let's say, a Republican member's perspective or a Trump supporter's perspective as it regards impeachment. The president is allowed to make foreign policy, right? If he does it through his national security advisor, who he appointed, John Bolton in this case, that's his choice. Or if he does it through his ambassador to the EU, Gordon Sondland, and his acting White House Chief of Staff, Mick Mulvaney, and his private lawyer, Rudy Giuliani, who says he's been authorized by the State Department, the president under the Constitution still has the authority to conduct foreign policy. What's impeachable about that?
Well, again, we're going to follow the facts, and I'm not going to make any determination one way or the other as to any possible recommendation since I sit on the Judiciary Committee. But let's be clear about a few different things. One, Rudolph Giuliani is not an ambassador. Rudolph Giuliani does not work for the State Department. Rudolph Giuliani is not a Foreign Service officer. Obviously, he's not a cabinet-level official. He's a political thug who was doing the president's bidding. And that in and of itself is an abuse of power and is not authorized. Even Mike Pompeo, I believe, indicated that Rudolph Giuliani was not operating within the authorization of the Department of State. If we take a step back and look at the entirety of this episode, it really begins with the fact that Congress, on a bipartisan basis, allocated $391 million in military and economic and diplomatic aid to Ukraine. Ukraine is a friend. Russia is a foe. Ukraine is a democracy. Russia is a dictatorship. Ukraine is currently under attack by Russian-backed separatists. And the United States is probably the only thing standing between Vladimir Putin and Ukraine being completely overrun. In that context, in February, the administration says to Congress in a letter that the aid to the Ukraine that we authorized is on the way, but it never arrived. And then in May of this year, the Department of Defense again wrote to Congress and said the aid to the Ukraine is on the way. And most importantly, Brian, all necessary preconditions have been met by the new Ukrainian government, including the implementation of anti-corruption protocols. That's a key phrase. That letter will be an important part of our inquiry as we move forward. Yet, once again, the aid never arrived. Twice during the summer, Mitch McConnell, Senate Republican Majority Leader, called over to the administration, said, "Where's the aid?" He didn't get a good answer, because there is no good answer, and that's in the public domain. Then you have the July 25th phone call where the president clearly pressures the Ukrainian president to target an American citizen, Joe Biden, for political gain, dig up dirt, and thereby solicits foreign interference in the 2020 election. That is clearly an abuse of power. The Ukrainian president appears to have agreed, and then subsequently, the aid in September is finally released. That is the result of a high-pressure tactic where the president basically is undermining our national security for his own political gain. He has turned the Oval Office into the Trump campaign reelection headquarters. That's not acceptable.
So one of my main theories about where this is headed is this. It's more or less going to come down to, yes, Trump did it. He asked a foreign president to investigate a potential political rival, Joe Biden, and at least implied to that foreign head of state that he could get official favors for doing it, a White House meeting that President Zelensky wanted, and that military aid to fend off Russia. So let's say the evidence becomes irrefutable that Trump did it in the ways that you've been describing, and Trump did it in the ways that the American people can understand. The question will become, is this bad enough to override the results of the 2016 election and actually remove Trump from office? So that's my question to you right now. Bottom line, let's say Trump did it. Is it serious enough for removal?
Well, that's a question for the Senate. And as you know, under the constitutional fabric, what the House is charged to do is to investigate possible impeachment. That's what we're doing right now with the inquiry. And then based on the recommendation that we may receive from the Intel Committee, the Judiciary Committee will have to make some decisions. If we make the decision to move forward with articles of impeachment, that effectively is an indictment of the president. What we are saying is that there is sufficient information for the Senate to consider removal. But that's hypothetical at this particular point, because what we're doing is just engaged in an exploration of the truth. No evidence has emerged, consistent with your question, Brian, to exonerate the president.
Let's take a phone call. Mary, you're on WNYC with Congressman Jeffries. Hi.
Yes, hi. Good morning. Thank you for taking my call. Congressman Jeffries, I'm wondering, does former Mayor Giuliani have a appropriate secret clearance? Is that something that, as part of the investigation, is that something that's going to be looked into?
Mary, that's a great question. We don't believe that he has a security clearance, that he undertook the necessary background steps consistent with someone who would be acting on behalf of the president dealing with foreign countries and foreign entities. And If in fact it turns out to be the case and our suspicions are confirmed, that would be another damning piece of evidence that Rudolph Giuliani, of course, was engaged as a political thug acting on behalf of Donald Trump to pressure a foreign government to target a foreign an American citizen and to thereby solicit foreign interference in the 2020 election.
Giovanni, you're on WNYC with Congressman Hakeem Jeffries. Hi, Giovanni.
Good morning. The question I have for the congressman is simply this. By having all these leaks that come out of, for example, the meeting yesterday with Fiona Hill, how does this help the prosecution? You're in the inquiry stage right now, and I would think that if you wanted to get all the best possible people to come forward, why would you allow, or have somebody allow, a congressman to come out and say, well, this is what's happened and this is what this person said? I mean, it's like trying the president in the public, and the public is a jury. Now, I'm not any fan of this president, but I am a fan of the judicial system. And I think this information, after you get it together and you have enough information for the inquiry, should go directly to the impeachment stage where it will be covered word for word.
Congressman, why behind closed doors? And if closed doors, why the leaks?
Well, I'm not sure where the leaks are coming from. I think that all the members of the Intel Committee, as well as the other relevant committees of jurisdiction led by Adam Schiff, have conducted themselves in an incredibly appropriate way. This is a serious matter. We're going to approach it with the solemnity that it deserves. The Intel Committee traditionally conducts depositions and acquires information because of the sensitive nature of the information that they're seeking in these closed-door depositions. At some point, presumably, there may be open testimony, and the president will have an opportunity to refute that testimony, as he essentially has had even in these depositions, because these aren't just Democratic members of the House who sit on these committees. They're Republican members, Devin Nunes, Jim Jordan, Mark Meadows. These aren't exactly shrinking violets. They are all in these depositions as well, and they have had an opportunity to question these witnesses. What we're seeing is that...
But let me jump in on that,
yeah.
Because Republicans are complaining that Fiona Hill's testimony and the other witnesses that House committees are hearing right now are testifying in private. They want it all out in the open, as the caller was saying. And at very least, they want the full transcripts released. So why do this without the sunshine of public hearings? And at very least, why not release the full transcripts that have that pushback that you were referring to a minute ago from the Republican members, their questioning, and Fiona Hill's responses and other witnesses' responses, rather than make the public start making world-altering judgments based on leaks to the New York Times?
Well, that's a great question. I presume at some point the entire transcripts will be released, but the Republicans can't have it both ways. You know, on the one hand, when you have an open hearing, you've got individuals like Corey Lewandowski who show up clearly not to participate in any real search for the truth, but to perform for the puppet master who's sitting at 1600 Pennsylvania Avenue pulling his strings. And they say, well, this is not a serious effort to try to find the facts and draw some conclusions. Now they're complaining that you have these solemn procedures that are taking place behind closed doors in a deposition setting. At some point, the testimony will be released, but they're complaining about that. Why are they basically on both sides of the same issue, Brian? Because they can't defend the indefensible. They have no argument on substance here. So they're raising outlandish procedural arguments. To the extent that this comes before the Judiciary Committee, there will be open testimony, I presume, after Chairman Schiff makes recommendations as to how to proceed, and that the protocol that is followed in the context of potential impeachment of the President of the United States will certainly be followed.
Republicans are also claiming that the whole impeachment inquiry so far is invalid. The president used that word. because you didn't take a full House vote to authorize it. Speaker Pelosi just declared it. Now, there's no law that says you needed a full House authorization vote to start this inquiry, certainly not in the Constitution that you need it. But yesterday I asked former Ohio Governor John Kasich, who, as you know, is a House Republican in the 90s and voted for Bill Clinton's impeachment, why they took a full House vote just to launch the inquiry back then. Listen.
It's a matter of fairness. It's a matter of giving those in the minority, or in the majority for that matter, an opportunity to review everything and to have it's a much more impactful process that really has weight in the courts if you're seeking additional information to get tied up in the courts. And it also establishes some rules. You want to have fair play, and you want to let the facts determine where we proceed on this.
So if that was good enough for the Newt Gingrich House, and as Governor, former Congressman Kasich was saying there, it also helped the House's case in court when and if the Clinton administration didn't want to provide witnesses or testimony or documents, as we're certainly seeing from the Trump administration now, why isn't it good enough for your and Nancy Pelosi's House?
Well, Nancy Pelosi is a constitutional officer. The Speaker is one of the few officers mentioned by name in Article 1 of the United States Constitution. When she declares that we're in an impeachment inquiry, that has the full force and weight of the United States Constitution, as well as the House rules. As you indicated, nothing indicating that we need to take a formal vote. You also have the overwhelming majority of the House Democratic Caucus and one independent publicly expressing support for an impeachment inquiry, so everybody knows what the outcome would be of a formal vote. That said, the Speaker has indicated that it is something that we may consider doing, but it is not something that is necessitated by the Constitution, by the Supreme Court precedent, by the House rules, or any particular federal law. Again, it's just simply an effort by my friends on the other side of the aisle to divert attention away from the fact that they cannot address the abuse of power and the undermining of the integrity of our elections and our national security concerns that were raised by the wrongdoing committed by the President of the United States, Donald Trump.
We're almost out of time. I'm not going to go down the list of other witnesses scheduled to testify this week, but suffice to say, we may have stories like these Fiona Hill bombshells every day this week from other administration insiders. But one guy I'm interested in is Michael McKinley, another new name to the general public. McKinley resigned suddenly last week as an aide to Secretary of State Pompeo, and now he's volunteered to testify tomorrow. And without those strings attached of being a current Trump and Pompeo employee, he can. Any idea what Michael McKinley might want to expose? Is he on your radar yet?
Yes, and this will be another example of former Trump appointees stepping forward as American patriots to tell the truth about what occurred, which was the hijacking of American foreign policy for the president's own political purposes. My expectation is that he will express serious concern with the wrongdoing that took place and may shed some light on the role that Mike Pompeo has played in this whole affair, because that's unclear. He refused, meaning Secretary Pompeo, to answer the question as to whether he actually met with Rudolph Giuliani overseas. It appears that he did. We need to know what was discussed there. And so McKinley may shed some light on Pompeo's role, who we know, Brian, was also on the July 25 phone call. Didn't have a word to say about it until it was exposed. And we need to know, was Secretary Pompeo troubled by those five words that the president uttered that will live in infamy as it relates to this time in history? Do us a favor, though. Those were the words issued by the president of the United States. Pompeo was on that call. It'll be interesting to see what McKinley has to say about it.
New York City Congressman Hakeem Jeffries, member of the House Judiciary Committee. Thanks so much.
Thanks so much, Brian.
Impeachment, a daily podcast, is excerpted from my live daily radio show, The Brian Lehrer Show, 10 a.m. to noon at WNYC.org. If you'd like to ask a question or suggest an impeachment-related topic for a future segment, Call us anytime at 744-845-TALK. That's 744-845-8255. Tomorrow, we'll have the latest with Andrea Bernstein from the podcast Trump Inc. and Heather Vogel from ProPublica. Talk to you then.